State versus Waters. Okay, there's really no visual images I can come up with for estoppel except that. So that's it. That's the flair. That's my flair. I don't have 10 pieces of flair. I only have this one. So this is a case dealing with a significant case dealing with collateral estoppel. Waters was on probation. She drove while she was intoxicated. And the state moved to revoke based on that. The trial court found that the DWI allegation was not true. So they made a determination of that. The state charged Waters with DWI after failing in the motion to revoke. And Waters filed a pretrial writ under Ex Parte Tarver, as you remember, saying, look, collateral estoppel prevents the state from going forward. I've already had this issue, this fact issue, adjudicated by the court. The trial court granted the writ saying, yep, collateral estoppel, you're done. And it goes to the, see, this is another way. You can't make collateral estoppel sexy. Exhibit A. So, you know. Anyway, so a unanimous court of criminal appeals reverses here and says, look, there was no double jeopardy because there wasn't a full litigation of the actual offense, but also because revocation here doesn't place the person in jeopardy for the new offense. It's actually an administrative proceeding. The penalty that the person is going to suffer is going to be the original penalty for the offense they were on probation for. Also, the court rejected that they said there was no common law collateral estoppel doctrine. I don't want to get into too much of this because I know someone who's way smarter than me is going to talk in greater length about double jeopardy, but I did want to highlight this here for you. Here, the reason that this doesn't apply, collateral estoppel doesn't apply, is because the trial court has the discretion to revoke or to continue or to modify the probation, so it's not a done deal that the trial judge has to do anything regardless of whether or not they make this finding. So collateral estoppel doesn't necessarily seem to apply there. I wrote a concurring opinion just to say, look, read this case called Currier versus Virginia from the United States Supreme Court. It seems to suggest that the Supreme Court might be moving away from the idea of fact-based collateral estoppel. They seem to recognize the idea that you can have that fact-based collateral estoppel is something for civil matters. It's not something for criminal matters. And so the concurrence agrees with the majority. So a unanimous court has said that Ex Parte Tarver has been overruled. And so now if someone is prosecuted it doesn't matter whether the probation case comes first or the criminal case that becomes the basis for a probation goes first. So sitting up there. Number eight. See, there's eight. Trailer versus state. Okay. This is sort of another significant sort of double jeopardy kind of thing here. Trailer was tried for a burglary with a deadly weapon. The jury indicated it was deadlocked. The trial court asked, how so? Which is not a good idea. And as the case shows. The jury indicated it was unanimous against burglary with a deadly weapon. Now, the note actually was, this is the sad part, the note was, don't tell me what your vote is, just tell me why. You know, don't tell me what the vote is on who's going to get what. And the jury goes, let's tell you where the vote is. Okay, this is where we're at. And so the jury indicates that it's unanimously against burglary with a deadly weapon. So they're going to acquit on the greater offense, but they're deadlocked on the lesser included of regular burglary. So the judge says, continue deliberating. They continue deliberating. Then there's another note later. I believe they go into another day. Another note later to say, look, we're now 8 not guilty to 4 guilty. But they don't care. They don't clarify whether they're on the greater or the lesser offense, right? The trial judge finally says, I'm going to declare a mistrial. Okay. Well, Trailer is then retried and found guilty of burglary with a deadly weapon. He argues that the mistrial was granted without manifest necessity, and therefore he was, you know, the jeopardy barred the subsequent prosecution. The Court of Appeals holds that the mistrial was proper, but they also say the retrial was not sort of reaching to the consequences of the mistrial and say the retrial wasn't proper because the note amounted to an informal verdict of acquittal. So you could have you can grant a mistrial. There was manifest necessity to grant the mistrial, but that note was an informal verdict of acquittal. So you shouldn't have retried him on the greater offense. So the Court of Criminal Appeals unanimously reversed. And they said, look, the jury note lacked the finality necessary to constitute an acquittal. All the jury said was that this is where we're deadlocked, but then they continued deliberating. The instructions that they were given allowed them to reconsider their votes for their greater offense as well. I believe at one point they even said, they were asked, were you able to reach a decision? They said, no, we were not able to reach a decision. So it's not an informal verdict. It didn't have the finality necessary to constitute an acquittal under federal law and a constitutional law, but the court also says it's not an informal verdict under 3710, which is a statute specifically dealing with what you're supposed to do when there is an informal verdict. And they said this isn't that because for the same reason it doesn't amount to an acquittal under federal law, it doesn't amount to acquittal here because this was clearly not intended by the jury to operate as an acquittal. So when you do the analysis on an informal verdict under 3710, the court seems to contemplate that this is going to be the same type of analysis you would do under the Bluford case for sort of a federal determination of whether or not that jury note constitutes an acquittal. And since we're talking about mistrials, Ex parte Gerels is another case I just wanted to highlight to you here. Just says, look, consent to a mistrial must appear in the record as a deliberate relinquishment. There, the defendant, or there was some ambiguity, the record was kind of silent, and the judge went ahead and declared a mistrial, and the defendant didn't object. And the argument was, well, the failure to object means that you kind of agreed to it. And the court says, no, that's not, you've got to actually affirmatively request the mistrial in order for the defendant to have otherwise you're going to be still be looking for manifest necessity.